Waves of protests shook Palestine and indeed the world in May as Israel launched yet another violent offensive on Gaza, killing at least 256 Palestinians, including 66 children. Sparked by the forced evictions and violence by Israeli settlers in Sheikh Jarrah and the storming of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, a phenomenal resistance, united across all of historic Palestine, has bravely stood up against the ethnic cleansing of the Israeli regime. Protests in solidarity with Palestine took to the streets internationally, exposing government's inaction and complicity with Israeli terror and apartheid. Movements are connecting and getting stronger, uniting with local anti-racist, anti-colonial struggles. With us today to discuss the significance of the Palestinian uprising and growing international movement is Jamal Nabulsi. Jamal is a diaspora Palestinian writer and researcher and PhD at the University of Queensland in the School of Political Science and International Studies. His recent piece in the Overland Journal entitled Writing the History of Palestine challenges and indeed tears down the misinformed history that distorts our understanding of the conflict in Palestine and which dominates mainstream media reporting and the official political discourse. Jamal is joining us from the sovereign lands of the Jagera and Turrbal people. You're listening to The Sound of Solidarity, brought to you by Solidarity, a revolutionary socialist group in Australia. I'm Sarah Thorne, and I'm recording this episode on unceded Wurundjeri land in Melbourne. Jamal, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'd like to start by asking if you could tell us a little bit about your own family's journey as part of the Palestinian diaspora.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd just like to start by reiterating your acknowledgement as well. I come to you from Yagara Turrbal country here in Mianjin. And just wanted to recognise that these sovereign lands were never ceded in a similar way to Palestine, and that it's crucial to recognise those connections when advocating for Palestine when I'm standing on stolen land myself, benefiting from settler colonialism here. So, to your question, my own family's journey. So it's my dad's side of the family that's Palestinian, and his dad fled Palestine in 1948 as a refugee of the Palestinian Nakba or catastrophe, and then. Yeah, him and some of his brothers were quite heavily involved politically and in resistance to Zionism after that. And my dad grew up sort of across the Levant region, mostly in Jordan, but also across Syria and Lebanon somewhat as well. And yeah, and then my dad ended up going to England for boarding school, where he met my mum, high school sweethearts, very cute, and they eventually moved here to Mianjin.
Great, thank you so much for that. In the last few years, there appears to be kind of a shift in ordinary people across the world, their understanding of the Palestinian struggle, particularly sort of in the context of the anti-racist movements, the Black Lives Matter campaign. But as you point out in your piece in the Overland, the narrative in the mainstream media remains very distorted and misinformed. Can you expand on this and why it is so important for you to correct that now, despite the immense cost that, you know, that places on you personally?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we have seen a shift in representations of Palestine and Palestinian resistance throughout this recent intifada. And I think I put that down mostly to the sort of strident advocacy of Palestinians, and particularly through, I guess, alternative forms of media, like social media, really pushing a kind of unapologetic Palestinian narrative. But still, especially in mainstream media, we face like incredibly distorted views of history that that really favour and are very much invested in the Zionist settler colonial project and its goals. And I mean, in places like here in so-called Australia and in the US, like, it's also quite unsurprising that, yeah, mainstream media and discourse would be invested in that narrative, Australians here have their own investments in their own settler colonial narrative that shares a lot of similarities with the Zionist narrative. So to challenge that is to at once, you know, challenge the settler colonial narrative here as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The latest resistance is sort of being coined as the Unity Intifada. Can you sort of explain what is meant by this and how you see it as being different to previous resistance movements for the liberation of Palestine?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the key ways in which Zionist settler colonialism has functioned is through the fragmentation of the Palestinian people. And I think this fragmentation occurs sort of across various levels or dimensions that are shot through one another. So there's the fragmentation of land, the sort of fragmentation of Palestinian political institutions, of families, and indeed of Palestinian selves as well. But I want to talk primarily about the fragmentation of the Palestinian populations across land, as I think this is primarily what the Unity Intifada expresses a resistance to and challenges. And so there's a real divide between Palestinian communities across what we call 48 Palestine, 67 Palestine, and the diaspora. And so I'll just explain that. 48 Palestine, 67 Palestine are spatiotemporal markers of the distinct stages of the Zionist colonization of Palestine. So in 1948, the Palestinian Nakba, the Zionist forces took hold of what we refer to as the 48 territories and occupied those lands. But even as over 780,000 Palestinians were expelled from those lands then and became refugees, still some managed to remain and face ongoing diverse forms of elimination there. And that population, that Palestinian population, persists now living in the state of Israel, holding Israeli passports, but living essentially as third-class citizens or as enemies of the Israeli state within the state. So that's 48 Palestinians. And then in 1967, in the aftermath of the Six-Day War, or during the Six-Day War, Israel occupied the remaining area of historic Palestine, the 67 territories, also known as West Bank and Gaza. And so the peoples of the West Bank and Gaza, the Palestinian peoples there, referred to as 67 Palestinians, and even there's an increasing divide across those two territories as well. And then during 1967, there was also approximately 400,000 more Palestinians became refugees and also were pushed out into the diaspora. At that point, having been across 48 and 67, three quarters of the Palestinian population were now refugees. And so those refugee populations were and are primarily in Lebanon, Jordan, and also in Syria, and now also further abroad, I mean, as far as here, in so-called Australia. And so with this fragmentation of the Palestinian population between those in 48 Palestine, in 67 Palestine, and in the diaspora, there's been a kind of fragmentation of Palestinian politics and a fragmentation of the indigenous Palestinian people as one people. And this has had really devastating effects for the pursuit of Palestinian liberation and has been a real sort of stumbling block for Palestinian politics and a strategy of Zionist colonization of Palestine, sort of, I think, reflected in the classic kind of divide and conquer mentality or strategy. And so what we see in the Intifada of Unity is a galvanizing of resistance across these distinct territories. So in Jerusalem, where the initial resistance kind of emanated from, you see it emanating from Jerusalem to parts of 48 Palestine, as well as to the West Bank and Gaza, and unified protests across historic Palestine, as well as in the diaspora. You know, you have Palestinian refugees in Lebanon, you know, families that have been there since 1948, walking to the border to return to Palestine and protesting at the border. Same thing in Jordan, and also protests across the world as well, organized primarily by diaspora Palestinians. And we had very large protests here across cities in so-called Australia as well. Here in Mianjin, we had probably, I'd say, the biggest protest that I've seen for Palestine here. And yeah, similarly in, I know down there in Naam as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Down here, I think we were looking at 10,000 or so people at the height of the May protests, more people than I've ever seen before on a Palestinian demonstration. And the flavour of it was very militant, incredible feeling of unity, particularly with the Aboriginal struggle as well. I'd like to sort of go back to some of the things you did mention, because at the moment you were still seeing protests in Palestine, particularly in the West Bank, not only against sort of Israeli repression, but also we're seeing the continued evictions and demolitions of people's homes and businesses in Silwan, supposedly to make way for some sort of historical theme park. And we are seeing that the protests in the West Bank are being attacked and, you know, repressed by the Palestinian Authority, who seem to be seeking more arms from Israel to repress their own people. And it appears that the Palestinian Authority is still sort of seeking this idea of trying to secure like this diminishingly small Palestinian state. And yet the new movement is calling, you know, for liberation, for Palestinians to be free from, you know, the river to the sea. So this seems to be, you know, really the end of the demands for a two-state solution. Can you describe what the demand is now?
Yeah, sure thing. So, yeah, there's a few things in there. I think it's clear to a lot of Palestinians and others now, I mean, as it has been to Palestinians for a very long time, the Palestinian Authority, the PA, is essentially an indigenous arm of the Israeli settler colonial project, and particularly through their, you know, incredibly controversial security coordination, so-called security coordination with Israel, where you see Palestinian activists in the West Bank, particularly going through what they call kind of revolving doors between Palestinian Authority prisons and Israeli prisons. And they might spend time in one and then the other for the same charge. And so, yeah, I think a lot of Palestinians, most Palestinians really see the Palestinian Authority as, yeah, one of the main barriers to a broader kind of Palestinian liberation, as you mentioned. So that's definitely one important point. I think on the question of solutions, I think the kind of, you know, the so-called debate between the two-state and one-state solution has been largely unproductive for Palestinians, actually. And I think particularly when outsiders, when non-Palestinians feel the need to like take a definitive stand on one state or two state, that's particularly a problematic dynamic that has been pervasive, really, in Palestinian solidarity. When, you know, I think really what we're asking for is to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people, regardless of what we decide. We want a decolonial solution to Zionist settler colonialism to be. And so I think something that's pretty amazing about the Unity Intifada is that these questions haven't really been debated amongst Palestinians as well, because they have served the split between one-staters and two-staters amongst Palestinians has really served as a kind of fragmenting tool as well. And I think Palestinians realize that this isn't really the question that we need to be asking. It's not about, prescribing a solution. It's about decolonizing Palestine.
Yeah, interesting. On that, there's been incredible, impressive solidarity between, I guess, the Aboriginal struggle here and their struggle against colonial settler regime in so-called Australia. And we are seeing the campaigns really uniting very powerfully. Whenever there is, you know, a demonstration against the deaths in custody around Aboriginal rights, there are always a strong contingent of Palestinians, always, you know, speakers on the platform. And on the flip side, very, very strong Aboriginal solidarity with Palestinian struggle. Can you sort of talk about why it's so important that these struggles remain connected and sort of why it's important to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's been one of the most beautiful things during the recent protests and here in Australia has been the outpour of Black Palestinian solidarity here and the increasing recognition, although it was, you know, certainly there previously in our solidarities, you know, do also have a long history. I think there's been a real shift and outpour of recognition that our struggles are inherently entwined and that challenging settler colonialism as a structure actually requires us to challenge, you know, settler colonialism wherever it is and wherever we can. And so particularly for diaspora Palestinians like myself who live as settlers here, it's absolutely crucial that we recognize our positionality here as settlers, even as we are indigenous to Palestine and unable to return there, and to fight these struggles essentially as one, because we're facing the same structure of colonization, even if it takes distinct forms across the two geographies.
Yeah, absolutely. In the past weekend, we've down in Naam in Melbourne, we've had another Palestinian solidarity protest to continue highlighting what is happening. Are you aware of what the next steps are in the campaign? Would you like to plug any events that are happening or protests people can get involved in?
Yeah, I think, yeah, something that I would like to plug is the BDS movement, particularly through BDS Australia, and it has more sort of localised forms in different cities across Australia, and to encourage people to get involved in that, because that's really the key strategy that we have as Palestinians and people who want to stand in solidarity with Palestine. It's a long-standing movement that's pushed for and advocated for by, you know, Palestinian civil society organizations across the board and individuals. It's really the call that's coming out from Palestine to people, you know, in places like Australia to get behind. And so what it is, it's a targeted boycott movement, and its goals essentially correspond to those three sort of fragmented communities of Palestinians. So its goals are the right of return for Palestinian refugees, the end of occupation and ongoing colonization of the 67 territories of Palestine, as well as equality for 48 Palestinians as well. And so The strategy of BDS, of boycott, divestment, and sanction, I like to think about it as working across three levels that correspond to the three letters in the acronym. So boycott is at a more individual level. You can boycott products and companies that support Zionism, and particularly the primary targets of BDS, which at the moment include Elbit Systems, which is a Israeli company that makes military equipment, and Puma Sportswear as well, who are sponsoring the Israeli Football League, which have teams in illegal Israeli settlements in the West Bank. And then, so the next level, divestment, is concerned more with the organizations that you might be involved in. So this could be your university, your union, or different types of community groups, basically pushing them to divest from these targets of BDS, these Zionist-supporting companies. And then the third, the sanctions, is to push the Australian government to hold Israel, the settler state of Israel, to account for its breaches of international law by putting sanctions on Israel.
Yeah, absolutely. Australia has always, and particularly in this last period, been one of the most belligerent supporters of the Israeli government, even vocally more so than the US at some periods. So I think it's absolutely, you know, imperative on us to keep the pressure on this government and keep them accountable and keep on the streets as well.
Absolutely.
So on that note, thank you so much. This seems like a great place to leave it. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
No, thanks so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure. And yeah, looking forward to the next time.
Great. Thank you so much for your time today, Jamal.
Thank you.